Hey, Eddie, you know what's awesome?
What's awesome, my love?
My little oil biz.
It is awesome, isn't it?
Do you like that name? Mom's little oil biz?
Almost as much as I love you.
Let's do this podcast, doTERRA style.
You got it, babe.
Welcome, everyone, to Mama's Little Biz podcast. My name is Angela Villa.
And I am Eddie Villa. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is going to be a lot of fun because, first off, we had some technical difficulties trying to record tonight's episode. And so it has to be fun. There's no way that this could possibly be more be worse than that time
but
it took to
knew
fix
that.
This.
You didn't have to tell everybody.
Sure. I think for me, I loathe technical difficulties when things work really well at the beginning and then for no apparent reason they just stop working. Mm. But we're on. We're ready to roll. This is awesome. And tonight you wanted to talk about a couple of different things.
Just ideas.
Yeah.
You're like, what do you want to talk about?
I typically like your ideas. Plus, your ideas are the only ideas you want to go with anyway. So it's been...
so rude.
Okay. So, well, first off, you had the idea of talking about how we... Like, our story.
Yeah, just figured, like, I couldn't remember if we just kind of sat down and talked about who we were. Who we have, you know, just us. We're always talking about, like, business stuff.
We've been, we're in, like, I think episode 100, almost 140 episodes now. And it certainly has been a while since we've even talked about why we podcast. Like, what's the purpose of doing this? Things like that. Because, you know, I noticed that I went and looked on the podcast feed and the first like 10 or 15 or even 20 episodes, I think, like they're not, you can't even listen to them anymore.
How come?
I don't know. I don't know. Podomatic is,
really?
It has issues, I guess. I don't know. So maybe I should message their tech support place, but people can't even go back and listen to the first few episodes of our show.
That's crazy.
And hear us back when we were gold.
We were babies.
We were new golds.
Babies.
And we were just talking about doing this. And you, I remember, so confused as to why we were doing this.
Okay. I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And, but, you know, obviously a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, everybody, even my friends who are not at all savvy, are like, what's your favorite podcast? I'm like, really? You're listening to that? Okay.
I noticed that every once in a while, somebody will post that on the many Facebook, doTERRA Facebook pages that we're on. And they'll say, what's your favorite podcast? And I never comment, but I do watch.
Should I'm be like,
waiting.
Shameless plug.
I never go listen to ours.
If you ever see somebody post on any pages, what's your favorite podcast? Be like... Mom's Little Biz, duh.
I probably see our podcast get mentioned about one out of every five.
They don't know what they're missing.
About one every five times I see someone post that. it's fun. Anyway, it's fascinating to me because I remember, this is the thing, is, so I'll tell you guys a little bit of history about this. When we first started podcasting, as always, I wanted to see if somebody else was doing it already.
Right.
You know? And there was no one. Nobody. There were no... I think that, if I remember correctly, there was an essential oil podcast, but it was not... Certainly wasn't doTERRA, a doTERRAist that was doing it. And then right after we started podcasting, I found another podcast called Faithful Wellness. A little plug for Faithful Wellness.
Are they back?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure of the history. I kind of lost the story. I was trying to figure out what it was. And I've never really talked to Eric about it. But our good friends, Eric and Chrissy Nordoff, out in the East Coast, they were doing a podcast at that time. And I want to say they had about... Man, maybe 20 or 30 episodes by the time that I started listening to them. And I wanted to hear what they were doing purely was just to make sure they weren't doing what we were doing. And I was like, I don't want to be another one, you know?
Yeah.
And all they talked about was essential oils. they were just talking about the oils and they were putting a biblical spin on it, which I thought was kind of cool. So they would use scriptures and, yeah. and they would tell religious stories. And I kind of dug it. I became a fan for a while until we got, and then I got to meet them in convention and I went up and introduced myself and was just so kind of like, this is so cool. Someone else who does podcasting around doTERRA. But there was nobody. Now.
Yeah, now everybody's like, oh, I made my new podcast. And I was like, Johnny come lately.
Yeah, there are, you know, we didn't.
I got a new podcast. It drops tonight. Okay.
we've been doing it a while. But anyway, just a little history on that whole thing. Like for me, doing the podcast was, I knew we were, and I've told people the story 100 times. I knew we were going to keep going once we hit gold. Like I knew platinum was going to happen. I knew diamond was going to happen. Blue diamond, presidential, all that stuff. I wanted to do two things. I wanted to document what it was like when we were gold. Right. I didn't want to ever forget what it was like to be gold. And then I wanted everything that we were doing to be put out there so that people could have like a, you know what it meant? Like it was like breadcrumbs. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? I'm going into this uncharted forest and I want people to follow us. You know, we're going to go down dead ends constantly, you know? And what I want to do is I want to leave breadcrumbs every step of the way. And every time we hit a dead end, I'll just backtrack, pick up those breadcrumbs and start a whole new trail. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was internally the idea for me. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm over here agreeing.
Yeah. So, anyway, when you said you wanted to talk about, I don't even know how I got on that tangent, but when you said you wanted to talk about like our history, what were you like
more specifically? Nothing to do with the business. I just thought it would be, let people get to know us better.
This weekend was Father's Day weekend.
Yeah, it's Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, and so it reminded me of being, a new dad. We were first living in Irvine, and this is just a thought that came to my mind. We were living in Irvine, and I was working at 24 Hour Fitness, and I remember you you highly encouraged me to take a sales job.
I did. I don't know why.
I can't remember what I was doing. Oh, I was working. Was I working at the bank?
The bank.
I was working at the bank. I was a bank teller. At First Financial Credit Union.
Because if you work at a bank, you make a lot of money, right? Because the bank has money. So obviously they pay their employees more than average jobs. God, how stupid and naive was I?
Well, I remember you, that was the thing that you taught me was how to get a job, which is you just go to businesses and you just take your resume in and you just say, hey, are you hiring? And here's my resume. And back then, I was like, what's a resume? I remember that. And I remember it was your idea to go into that bank. And it was just down the street from where your parents were living. Mm-hmm. And I got hired in that bank the week before we were going to get married. And they were cool with me getting married, going on my honeymoon, coming back and starting the job.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool.
Yeah, because I was already working. So I graduated college in fitness and wellness management. So I was already working as a personal trainer at 24 Hour Fitness. So once upon a time, yes, I did that. And then, so I had been working there and you didn't have a job?
I was working at the bank. We were living in that little town called Santa Ana Heights.
Yeah.
Remember, it was like a weird little.
We weren't living there because we weren't married yet. We had gotten an apartment to move into.
Yeah.
After we were married.
After we got married, that's where we were living. Yeah. And so you would ride your bike.
Yep, I would ride my bike to work, which was about a 40-minute bike ride, and that was awesome. I remember that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you would take those. That was the cool thing about.
Take Back Bay trails.
Awesome. Newport Beach and Irvine, California. Orange County, basically, there's a lot of like bike trails that go from the connect cities.
Like, yeah, you paid a lot to live in Irvine, Orange County, but you could bike everywhere. You could walk everywhere, without ever really having to cross the street.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty cool back then.
Yeah.
So you, I wasn't working at the bank anymore and, I got a job.
I was pregnant. That's right. I was pregnant with Madison.
Or with our first.
Yeah. And I came home and you'd gotten fired.
Yeah.
That's a new story.
Well, okay.
Hey guys, Eddie's fired again.
Just so everybody knows, I have been fired 1, 2, 3, 4 times in my life.
And I have been fired 0.
So the first time I was fired, I should have just quit because that was an awful job. And they fired me because I hated working there and they hated me there. It was a bad situation. And I'm surprised they fired me. I'm surprised they didn't just ask me to quit because I would have. That time that I got fired at the bank was because the way, I don't know if you guys know this, but when you're a bank teller at the end of the night, you have to balance. And if your till doesn't balance at the end of the night, nobody gets to go home. Nobody gets to leave the bank until everybody's balanced. And there was this one night in particular where I just didn't balance and we couldn't figure out what it was. Like a week or so had gone by and they couldn't figure it out. And so they just said, "Hey, look, Eddie, I looked everywhere. I'm so sorry, but we have to let you go. I can't figure out how this happened." And it was pretty emotional. Her name was Becky. Becky was sweetheart. And she was sad. And I was, of course, sad. And they let me go and blah, blah, blah. And we came. And I, before I went to go work at 24 Hour Fitness, they had actually called me to tell me, remember this?
Mm-hmm.
That they found out what happened. It was a bank error. And then I was able to come back and get my job.
Yeah.
So technically, I wasn't really fired. You know what I mean?
Details.
Anyway, yeah, just to let everyone know, I'm not a total loser. Just a mild-mannered loser. Anyway, so, so I ended up being a fitness counselor.
Yeah, because I thought, oh, commission, cool. That makes sense. When I would get commission, my checks would be a lot higher.
I remember, like, you had a $3,000 check.
Yeah, commission checks were awesome. Like, I sold training packages, and when I started to get good, you know, commission checks were pretty fantastic.
Do you remember the first time you sold a training package?
Yeah.
What, do you remember how you felt?
Like, on top of the world. Like, oh my gosh. You know, yeah, you just feel on top of the world. And everybody says once you get your first, that's when you break that barrier. And then you can sell whatever you need to sell, whatever you want to sell. And it was true because I got really good at, you know, selling training with me because people wanted to work with me.
Do you remember when you sold your first one, were you obviously happy and excited? Or did you kind of like have like a poker face in front of this?
No, I don't have a poker face.
So you what?
I was excited. I was told them, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're my first sale. You're my first client. That this is awesome. And yeah, total idiot.
Mine was so awkward. So I remember the guy that bought the first membership from me. I was like, all right.
Wee-hoo.
So as I'm drawing up his paperwork, he literally goes, "Why are you so happy?" I remember that.
Did you have to be like, "Cause you get to work out now"?
I said something even lamer than that. Good. I was like, "No, I'm just happy for you, man." Oh, I remember that. I was so awkward. The truth was like, I just can't believe why you bought that.
You were so not good at sales, man. You were so bad.
Yeah, but I learned very quickly, and I got very good at it. And I remember that in just, like, after my month, after a month and a half, I was training new people coming in.
That's true. It doesn't matter how bad you start off.
No.
You can always get better. Choose to get better.
Yeah, that was my thing was, I really wanted to get good at it. And I felt like I could get good at it if I just practiced hard and focused.
Yeah.
And I got good at it really fast. And it was a big deal when I got remember the secret shop thing they have, mm-hmm. where they have someone come in and pretend to want to buy a membership.
Yes.
And then they score you based on all the things. And I got 100%, which was rare.
Yeah. I remember that.
And then they pulled me into the office with the other people and told everybody that I got 100%. And at this point, I'm going to be training all the new people. I remember that. That was an uplifting. And that was pretty much the high point. My first month. It's all downhill from there.
It's all garbage from there.
Oh my gosh. Do you remember do you remember our GM?
Yeah.
This was, this is so weird.
It was a tiny man. Tiny.
You and I worked in the same place. This was the only other time you and I worked together. Yep. Technically. We sort of worked together.
We worked together at Disneyland, worked together at 24-Hour Fitness. Did we work? We didn't work together again until...
Well, we sort of worked together again at the Irvine Company for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not really. You were at the other property and I was at my property. That was
such a bad job for me. That's terrible.
But I actually first recently I was thinking about my first sale. The first time I ever sold something. That was a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
It happens a lot in our business. Like people get their first sale and then they have two directions to go. From there they can continue to just get better, fall on their face, get better, or they can be like,
think that that's the last one they'll ever get. That's the
last one they'll ever get. And then they get a, no thank you on the next one. They're like, this is so not for me. That was luck. But they don't realize, golly, how many times you don't sell something.
Oh my gosh. It was, I can remember every single time I didn't get a sale at 24 Hour Fitness. I remember every one of them. They were all painful experiences. And not because I didn't sell it. It was because someone around me loved to remind me over and over again about how bad that was.
Yeah, he was a really bad general manager.
Every single time I missed a sale, he pulled me aside and everybody knew what was happening because he did it right in front of everybody. And he brought out a piece of paper and eventually that piece of paper ended up being a write-up because I didn't do something. There was something in the steps that I'm supposed to do and because I didn't get the sale and... then I wasn't doing my job.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty crazy. I mean, because the way sales works is you could do everything perfect and not everybody's going to buy.
Yeah.
And for me, who was doing everything right, was still not getting sales like normal, you know? But you only close about 10, maybe 15 or 20% of the people that come into a health club to buy on their first visit.
Mm-hmm, on their first visit, yeah.
On their first visit, and that was the expectation. Everybody buys on their first visit. And for someone like me who was closing maybe 2 or 3 out of 10, that was 7 very painful experiences every single time.
And it made you just hate it more and more and more and more and more because you couldn't really ever learn from your mistakes without being, like, berated for them. That's true. Whereas when someone didn't buy from me from training, I didn't get reprimanded. I didn't get written up. I didn't get berated. It was just, well, go find someone else to talk to. And so I didn't hate it. I didn't like loathe meeting with someone thinking that, oh my gosh, I'm going to meet with this person and they're not going to close. And then I'm going to get written up. Like that was your process. Mine was
the
just,
second they walked in. The yeah. second someone walked into the gym.
Mine was just talk to the person, sell them. If they don't buy, go find someone else to talk to. And so I had a different outlook on what I did every day.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got pregnant with Madison that I was like, I hate it here because I was so tired all the time. That was different. That was fun. So yeah, it's interesting. We as network marketing coaches, when we have team members who are doing this business with us, how we respond with their process, with what's going on in their business, is really, it's delicate. We have to always be ourselves and work in our strengths, but we have to leave our emotion behind it, out of it. Like our numbers aren't there. If our numbers aren't, like he was only up your butt all the time because his numbers, his office, his building, his whatever. You have to take, when you're training someone new to run their own business, you have to not make it so personal to your business. Yes, they are a part of your business, but they're literally starting up their own. And what you do in that process will set them on a path. And it can be great and it can be awful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, when someone comes to us and wants to do the business with us, we're not like, you know, we're not signing them up as an employee.
No. They're running there. They are literally saying, I would like to start my own business with you.
With me supporting you. And, yeah. You know, and being there for you, whatever level you need.
Yeah, it's not like, okay, you're my diamond leg, so you are everything I need right now, and I'm all in with you. That might be the case, but when someone is starting out, you can't put them on that. Put them on that pedestal. It's not really a pedestal. That would suck. You can't put that kind of like intense pressure on them. Yeah, they have to commit or not commit, and you got to talk to them and ask questions and partner with them. But how you respond, like just for instance, just between the two of us in sales, I didn't hate it. Because I had opportunity to mess up, pick myself up, and try again. You did not have that. You were shamed whenever someone didn't buy something.
Yeah, it was a public lynching.
So it's very different.
Very different, very traumatic. Yeah. And I didn't even know for the longest time that it was traumatic. Like it was like a PTSD kind of thing. Yeah.
You do not like Marines very much.
No. So
he was a Marine.
He was ex-Marine. So you're not a Marine anymore if you're not in the Marines, but yeah. They will never like, and a Marine's probably listening to this and going, no, it's not Eddie. When you're a Marine for life. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't mean that. I get brotherhood. I get the brotherhood and all that, but I think he was trying to run the gym as if it was a military. Because in what I know about, from what I've observed of the military, people I know and so on, it's very, you do it this way.
Well, yeah, you have to run something like that.
Yeah, I mean, because we're talking about lives at stake.
Yeah.
Okay, totally understand that. So that's great there. But when it comes to the workforce, lives aren't at stake. It's in you, so you can't ask me to conform.
It's not one way.
Yeah, you can't ask me to conform to one style because the truth is it's not really life or death. I can be my own. I can do my own strength. I can take what my strength is and be really amazing at it. I could have even better numbers than anybody else and do it completely different than they do.
Right.
Like, you know, like we talked about with strength finders or even energy profiling and all those other stuff that we talked about, you know, understanding that in network marketing, it's better to spend time understanding a person's strength.
Yeah.
What is it they are good at? Mm-hmm. It's so much better to spend a lot of time in the beginning figuring those things out rather than telling them they only have to do it this way. Right. There's only one way to do it.
Right. You have to obviously teach people the basic skills to start and move forward with this business. But you have to give people the opportunity to explore this business in their space, in their strength. And you have to listen. When they say things like, when they say trigger things, like not trigger things, what's the word I'm looking for? They'll say things that are dead giveaways on like, I'm not happy here.
They're like clues.
They're clues to how they feel, how they think they're supposed to be building or doing this business. And it's usually something that you've said, well, this is the only way to do it. This is how I do it. So do it this way. And they'll come back and say something. And if you're not really listening, then you're gonna lose people. You have to listen to them. Like Eddie's really, really, really good at listening to people. And what I noticed you do is you write down their clues.
I write down whatever clues towards towards who they are, their personality. Uh-huh. People, and this is interesting. This is why I like writing things down. Uh-huh. Because people won't, without even knowing, they'll make statements about how they think.
Yeah.
Just in the flow of conversation, and they'll say things that are definitive statements, but to them it sounds like a conversation. But the truth is they're making, like, I can't do this. They'll say those words. Mm-hmm. Or I can't do it that way. Or this is not meant for me. They'll say those little things. And instead of just calling them out, I love to encourage them to keep going. Go down this path. But while they're saying those things, I write those things down. Because it's like it paints a picture of who we're talking about. What we're really... Because people don't come out and tell you the problems.
No. No, they tell long stories.
No, and like the people that you're working with, man, they won't come out and tell you, I don't like classes. I'm good at one-on-ones. I don't like phone. I'm good at text. They don't come out and tell you that because they don't really know that that's even relevant. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of getting into this concept of how to work with people based on their strengths. How to discover a person's strength is to do what was done for me, the third sales job that I got in my career, which was where I nailed it. It was like the perfect balance of coaching that I received and the environment to thrive.
Yeah.
That was the third one, which I'll get to that in a minute. But the second one was a little bit better, that allowed me to have a little bit more freedom. And I remember the first time I was working at the Irvine Company. And the first time I had someone come into my office, and I was nervous as hell because I didn't know much about sales other than, you know, if you don't sell, then you get written up. That was the story I told. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when I went to go work for the Irvine Company the first time? We were so excited.
We were, because a friend of yours had said, you know, apply here. And I kept pushing you to do it. I remember.
Yeah. And so I got a job there, and my first tour where someone came in to look at an apartment. We went to the tour, came back, and the person didn't buy. And I was like, oh, crap. So I had to go over to my manager. Her name is Cameron, sweetheart, like one of my favorite people still to this day. I went up to her and I said, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, what happened? I go, they didn't buy. They said they want to think about it, which became like the worst thing ever. Like, oh, gosh, it's like a freaking nightmare hearing I want to think about it. I just want to think about it. Oh, yeah, let me think about it. Oh, I just want to punch people in the face when they say that. So it's just a polite way of saying no. That environment was where if I didn't get a sale, no problem. Go do it again. I didn't get a whole lot of coaching, mm-hmm. You know, not a whole lot. Okay, what did you do? What would you do different? And so on, like I do with people now. But it did give me the freedom to try different things. Just experiment even, mm-hmm. You know. And then... they didn't care what I tried as long as, number one, I didn't offend anybody and as long as I didn't miss too many sales. And, you know, and how they let you know you're missing too many sales is they write you up.
Sure.
So I remember getting written up early on in that job. And I think personally I was just doing it just to see how many I could get away with.
Great.
So proud. Yeah. Anyway, so does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, do you thrive like that when someone is just giving you the freedom to just go figure it out? Like, or did you always need guidance or ideas? Or
no, I didn't. I'm not that way. I mean, you give me the basics of what I'm supposed to do, and if I want to engage in it, like if I want to. I'm very internally driven. So if it's something I want to engage in, I will go all in. That's just what I do.
So you never like went and asked for advice for people. Okay.
Ask for advice, but it wasn't like, you know, when I would go next door and knock on Laura's door and say, hey, I have, you know, an aunt that's on the fence, you know, what should I, you know, I would say, would you just enroll her with the oil she wants or try and get her to do it? I would ask, and then I would just go in for it and be like, hey, you know what? Here's what feels best. Let's do this.
Did you do that same thing at 24 Hour Fitness too?
Yes, yeah. I did. Because I knew, yeah, I did. I don't know specifically why, but I just, if it was always right. In the moment, it was always right. I was always doing what I needed to do to get the job done. But that's how I've always been. And the thing is, not everybody's that way. And so I can't say to people, well, just go for it. That means nothing to them. That means nothing to my, you know, analyzers. It means nothing to my, you know, I need to have fun if I'm going to go. It means nothing. So, and to say just, you just need to want it means nothing to people.
Or just go have fun. Just have fun. Just enjoy it. Yeah. It
means nothing to people. Even if you write down a path, like this formula right here is the end all be all, and it is what gets you 10 enrollments a month. It doesn't make sense to people. Because not everybody's the same. Not everybody, you know, we don't all do this the same way. And if you shoot someone in the foot because they didn't do it your way, you just lost someone who could potentially put thousands of dollars into your business. Because you were so forceful about it being done your way. And the thing is, most people don't even know they're being forceful about their way. It's just the only way they know.
Yeah, and you know, this, you can... you can tell when you're a forceful person in your business, when you notice that you're also a forceful person in your marriage, mm-hmm. and you're a forceful person in your parenting.
Mm-hmm. You're a pushover in all those areas. You can tell all of these.
Right, right. How you act in your relationship with your children and your spouse is exactly the way you interact with people and doing your business. It's precisely the same thing.
Like if you're yelling at your kids because they're putting their socks on the way that they put their socks on and not the way you put your socks on, you're probably yelling at your team members for not doing classes the way you do classes. Probably yelling at your spouse for not doing something in your relationship the way that you do. You have these expectations. You have this way, and you're trying to force it on everybody in your life, and that's just not how it works.
Even if you're not raising your voice, you're yelling.
Yeah.
Your disappointment of them is loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Yeah. And it's obvious. You can hear it in your tone. You cannot hide it because it's who you are when you're a mom or a dad. Yeah, it's who you are when you're a spouse, when you're a friend. It's also who you are as a mentor and a leader in this business.
Yeah.
If you're chaotic in your family, you're going to be chaotic in your leadership. And so what's cool about this is that, you know, if you can figure out how to fix one and one, you can apply that exact same thing to the other.
True.
And I think that's what made when Satama had coached us originally, he said, up-level that marriage right now.
Yeah.
It was extremely critical to him that we focus on our marriage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got it, the theory. We understood the theory. Like, people are probably listening to us right now and they're like, okay, I get the theory, but I don't understand. We didn't either totally, but mm-hmm. we wanted an up-leveled marriage anyway.
Yeah. So we started putting in the work, and that's what counts the most, is just start, even though you don't know what it means, start by putting in the work. It's, yeah.
You know, when people are in our team, when they're struggling with as leaders in their business, because they're our friends and because we love them, we care about them, mm-hmm. they're like family. You know, I personally, I don't know about you, but I ask, like, how's it going with so-and-so, your husband or your spouse, your wife? How's it going with that person? You know, are you having similar issues there? Yes. Okay. Let's start there. And here's what's awesome is that if you practice getting better in your marriage, it's like practicing being a better leader. It's totally like, so, okay, if you want to be more patient with your team, start by being more patient with your spouse.
Start by not looking at your spouse like they disgust you. Because... I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I see it. It's every area of your life. If you are looking at your kids like they are a total waste of space, total waste of space, disgusting, just not doing life the way they should be doing it.
In your mind, yeah.
In your mind. You're probably also having that issue with your spouse. You are. You're like, ugh, you disgust me. You don't give me what I need. We don't have enough money. All these things. And you're probably also having these issues with your team members. They don't do the work. They don't have the classes. They won't listen to me. They won't get on the calls. It's like a telltale. I have leaders who will, post on Facebook all about how they have this
you know, body issue, this health issue. And I'm like, I bet they're not dating. They're not going out. I bet they're having issues with their kids right now. Or they're, you know, way too focused on their kids. And they're ignoring their health issues. They're ignoring their marriage. They're ignoring their business. It's just, it's, you can tell. You can tell. I mean, when I'm in the most negative space in my business, when I start talking about leaders a specific way, I look back and I'm like, we haven't had date night in over a month. I haven't done anything good for my own health. Like, I haven't focused on my health. I haven't focused on my, you know, what's the word that's popular right now?
Balance.
Self-care.
Oh, self-care.
and I'm usually having battles with some of my kids. I can see it. And I kind of have to stop and go, wow, I am so out of whack right now. And you figure out a way to pull it together. And you just, I mean, it's easy to, that's what kind of like why we like the core four, because it just makes you put two notches in each category. So you know that each day you're working on the four categories.
Yeah. I mean, here's my thing is like, if you want to be a better leader with your people, start by doing a date night with your spouse. Mm-hmm. And really work to make that date night fun for both of you, which requires what? Conversation.
Conversation about anything but your business and your kids.
And it's a conversation about what you both want.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to, like, talk about the things that you don't normally talk about or you don't find interest in because that's what they want to talk about. And it takes work. It's not easy. I mean, there are still times you're like, let's talk about this. And I'm like, oh, I'm head against the wall. But, you know, once you stop and you pull your pride out of it and you pull your head out of your butt and you just listen, you start having a conversation, it's just fun.
Yeah. There are times where you are avoiding the important conversations that need to be had in your marriage, mm-hmm. or your relationships. You're avoiding those conversations, the really critical ones that need to happen.
Yeah.
Crucial conversations, crucial as they are said, right?
Right.
When you're avoiding the crucial conversations in your personal life with family, friends, spouse, children, or whatever, if you're avoiding those crucial conversations because you're telling a story, they won't listen, or they're just going to think I'm trying to be mean, or whatever stories you're trying to tell about those people, I guarantee you are doing the exact same thing with the people in your business.
Yeah.
And because you're avoiding those conversations in your business is going to be stuck just like your relationships with these people.
Yeah.
It won't move. And what's awesome about starting with the relationships is that you're starting with people that love you. And it's you're in a place where you can make some mistakes.
Yeah.
You can make some mistakes in your relationships. It's your people that you work with and in your business. Making mistakes there, it can be costly.
It's not as forgiving.
No, it can be eternally costly. So practicing in your relationships is efficient, and it's going to give you a new perspective, and you can make mistakes there. You know, especially this is what I like about marriages, you know, but, and you know, whenever people hire me to coach them or people on our team, we have these long conversations about these struggles they're having. I always challenge them to let's look at the marriage and let's do something different. Like, let's go on a date night. I need you to go on a date night. You need to figure this out. And the people that give me resistance, uh-huh. every single time when it comes to date night,
yep.
they have never, ever gotten out of the place that they're stuck in.
Yeah.
Never. All it inevitably does is the relationship ends or their relationship with the business ends. It always comes crashing down. But only 100% of the time.
It's true. Because how you do anything is how you do everything.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. Yes?
Yeah, it really is. It really, really, really is. How I do anything is how I do everything. And if I take my pride out of this and be like, no, that's not me. If I take my pride out of it and I just step back and I look at what I, like the patterns that I've in my life, it is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. You can track it. You can track it on the calendar. I mean, that's what I would challenge all of you listeners is to kind of create a four square This is the core four, and I know one of our podcasts talks about it. You create this four square, and there's four categories: body, which is your health; being, which is your spirituality; balance, which is your family, your relationships, and your business. So body, being, balance, business. And every day, you're supposed to have two, I call them notches, in each category. You've done two things for your body, for your health, for your spirituality, for your relationships, and for your business. And if you just do that, just tracking your normal, you'll see some days that one of those squares is empty, one only has one, and one is full. It's got like 12. And you can see that you can watch and things aren't going the way they're supposed to go because you're so off kilter. I just challenge you to track that and see where you're lacking and slacking, and then make a conscious effort to alter it just a bit.
Did you notice after hitting diamond, which was March of 2015, mm-hmm. and we had really gone all in on our marriage for 3 months at that point.
Yeah.
At that point, we had committed to date nights, we committed to communicating and being honest and telling the truth with each other and having crucial conversations.
Yeah.
That was when we really committed to doing it. And it was right around March when we hit diamond for the first time. Can you remember how that your ability to have crucial conversations with me, where we just talked it out, right? The hard stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know? The problems that we were having in our marriage, that we talked them out in a way that we were avoiding them before.
Yeah, you had the hard conversations.
So do you remember how developing that skill in our marriage affected the way you communicated to the leaders in our business at that time?
Yeah, it. I do know that I was able to be more upfront. I was able to, even though it was scary, I was able to talk about the business more. So I was so terrified to talk about the business to certain people because I didn't want to turn them off. But I got good at saying things to you, even though they may not have been the easiest things to hear.
Because you were afraid that they were going to turn me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were afraid I was going to react negatively. So you had this fear of being totally honest and saying, this business is amazing and you really need to look at it. You were holding off doing that out of fear of what they'll say when you're telling that level of truth. Same thing was happening in our marriage where you were afraid to say what you were really thinking out of fear of how I would react. Yeah. And you had every story in the book to prove that I would react negatively. But the point is that when we had those conversations, when we said those things and our marriage actually improved, and you saw the positive benefit of telling the truth and being true to you, it just naturally rolled over into talking about the business. And it was during that time was when we enrolled our second biggest leg was born during the time where we were pushing hard in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not a coincidence. Mm-mm. Those are directly connected.
Yeah. And it happened again when we hit Blue Diamond. I had worked so hard on my health that I had been neglecting for a long, long time. I'd been working so hard March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, when I had just... We just went after it. It's like I took control of my health and then I took control of my business. I owned my business. I guided my leaders and said, hey, I want to do this. Who's in with me? But I still owned what was happening in my business. Even if my leaders weren't in, I still was.
So you're saying that that taking ownership of your health,
mm-hmm.
holding yourself accountable, mm-hmm. saying one way or another, I'm going to get better health-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hit my targets.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have any outside influences to blame anymore.
Right, Right. And so you were just like, you were taking full responsibility for how you were, what your results were going to be. And that exact same, mentality transitioned into your business.
Yeah.
And I remember that because I remember you communicating to everybody for the first time
ever
that, hey, I am going to hit X rank.
Yeah.
And I want you to come with me.
Who wants to join me
and so on.
That was the first time.
Okay. So hitting Blue Diamond was the first time where you had made those declarative statements,
mm-hmm.
To people.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. So how did those two things connect for you? The health and the Blue Diamond thing?
It's just, when I stopped relying on these outside things, not relying, but passing blame to why I was super overweight and emotionally unstable, and stop passing blame, blaming this person, blaming that person, blaming this scenario that happened in my life. I just got really good at not blaming anything anymore and just taking full control of my emotional health and wellness, and what I put in my mouth, what I fed my body. I took full ownership of that. And when it came time for, when I felt like, I don't want to drag anybody around anymore. Like, I don't want to, like, just telling myself, I don't want to drag these stories of my sister's death and all that stuff around anymore. Those things aren't influencing me anymore. I don't need them. It's same thing with my business. I don't want to drag these people who are wearing me out. They don't feed my business. They don't feed my soul. They don't want more. So why am I trying to drag them around? And so when I came to that realization, like, yes, I need people to hit the ranks, that I want to be, but I can still take full ownership of my business and stop blaming these people or these legs or these spots, these holes, and just own my stuff. Talk to all the people and whoever accept my challenge and like, yeah, I'm all in. I want that paycheck. I want that title. Let's work with them. So yeah, it was very closely, very similar to what I did with my health. Like, stop dragging all the stories around. Stop dragging all the dead people around who just have all their own stories. Let it go and focus on what you can.
I remember you looking at our organization and going, and you stopped going, well, I need this person to move. I need this person to move. I need this person to move. You stopped saying that and you started saying, who can move? Who wants to move? And so you started talking to everybody.
Yeah.
And when you talk to everybody, you found ways to move those who were ready to do something with you. You found ways to move them.
Yeah.
You found ways to strategically place them in different places, depending on where they were.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't really go into how because that's complicated. But the point is that once you found the people that were willing to work,
mm-hmm.
it was easier, or the idea that the path became clear.
Yeah.
That person right there is going to work. How can I get them in a position in my business so that this is tight?
Rather than living with the story of that only person's that person. Not going to go anywhere. This person is, they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I'm heavy. I'm overweight because my sister drowned, or I'm overweight because my parents, this, that, or the other. No, I stopped that. I stopped that for almost a year leading up to our rank. And I realized if I can do this with my own health, I can do this in my business. You know, I'm not going to drag people around. I'm not going to drag my stories around anymore. So how we do anything is how we do everything. And if you really understand that, you can make massive changes in all categories. You know, you don't have to carry around these false stories. You don't have to believe that nobody wants to do this business and that I'll never be successful unless XYZ people are successful or want to move. No, we created like 2.5 new legs with people who wanted to go from nothing to, you know, gold or silver or premier.
Right.
And they wanted to do it more than people who already were sitting there at that rank, you know? And so that's what I said, okay, let's go, all in.
So this concept, and I think we'll probably title this, How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. This concept can make it very easy for you to figure out how to discover a person's strengths in the business. How do I get this person to be effective at their strengths at a very high level? And it's really easy. Look at their health, look at their spirit, and look at their relationship. Where are they excelling? Find out why they're excelling at that. What are they doing that's working in those areas? And then your next question needs to be, how can I get this person to live their true strengths that they're already living in this other area of their life? How can I get them to apply that in business, in this business? This is why I work really hard at being a good listener, because if I'm going to make a play with someone, if I'm going to put together a strategy based on a person's strength, I need to be 100% clear that right there is the absolute best strength to roll with a person.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, I have to care. Yeah. I have to care about details.
So interesting. I just kind of had a... And that's why I had to get really good at saying, Eddie, listen to this person's situation so you can come up with this.
That's my strength. My strength is patience. Patience with something that doesn't appear to be strong.
My strength is maximizing the situation. If I'm not good at that thing, I hand it over.
Yeah, and you're also very, very talented at discovering and sniffing out talent.
Yeah.
You can spot a powerful and talented person just by looking at them. You have this instinct with people, and you also... because of that, you talking about maximizing. You can maximize so much with that one person. And I don't have that. I have in my mind, anybody could be great.
Anybody could be great.
Anybody could be great. So all I got to do is I got to figure out.
Which is true. But I can pull you pretty quick. And then I say silly things like, do you trust me?
Yeah, and you and I go about it in totally different ways, and I love that. I love that we go about it in different ways. It's important that we go about it in different ways, because we bring in different types of people. We uplift different types of people.
Yeah,
we
effectively absolutely.
Train different types of people, and so I'm grateful that we do things so differently. Yeah, but
you can get people to...
Sorry.
What's happening over there?
Sorry, I was joking. Good.
You can get people to talk where I can't. I intimidate some people and they won't talk. But I can get people to move.
Yeah.
I can get people to move fast. And the ones who don't aren't ready, I say, hey, you know what? You need to talk to Eddie. And you get down to the core of why they don't can't move or they don't want to move. And then we work from there.
I'm totally cool. I've had conversations with people for an hour just to find out this is not going to work out. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally cool with that, because that hour saved us...
Years. Years.
Yeah.
And it allows me to take the person that hour conversation was with in a different path.
Yeah, totally different path. And the right path.
Yeah.
The right path right now. And who knows? They could probably change their minds. And
yeah. Exactly.
And that does happen on occasion.
No one is ever out for good. I'm like, come on. It's not the way it is. But anyway, we're going to end because there's a lot more we can go on and on about. But it's all about, like, check the health of your people. Like, if they're, and this is all categories, if their health is struggling, their health of their business, their leg, their health in their organization is struggling. And if their health in the organization is struggling, the health of their marriage is struggling. It is. I challenge you to take a look at the health of your people, of yourself, and look for ways that you can tweak and adjust and start to get that health back. So I hope this was helpful. I hope you got a kind of a feel for, more of a feel for Eddie and I and where we kind of come from and you know, where we want to go. But you have anything else, Eddie? No?
Well, just this one last thing. I think people get into this business because they think they're just going to sell some things on the side and get lucky.
No.
But the truth is, my friends, that if you're going to do the business, you know, the when you look at what a diamond gets paid, and you look at what a blue diamond gets paid, and you look at what a presidential diamond gets paid, not one of those people, not one, ever just only up-leveled their business.
Yeah.
Not one. All of them had to up-level everything. Their health, their spirituality, their relationships, because their mindset about life had to up-level. Yeah. So don't get in this business thinking that you're just going to piddle your way to a even a $5,000 a month paycheck. You're not. Come into this business with the full intention of up-leveling yourself in every single way. And look at the benefit of that. Like, hey, would it benefit you to improve your health? And I don't mean lose 500 pounds. All I'm saying is improve your health, improve your relationships, improve your mindset and your spirituality, and thus improve your bank account.
Yep.
It's freaking worth it. It's not a job. This is better than a job. This is you, like your own personal worth.
Yeah. So good.
It's so much better, you know? So like when I go and I have a, if I had a job and they paid me $20 an hour, that's not my worth. That's not my worth at all. That's just what they're paying me per hour. That's just what I've convinced them that I'm worth. My true worth is found when I build a network marketing business, because building a network marketing business requires me to up-level everything. And my bank account, that residual check, that's my true worth right now. And the awesome thing is that no matter where you are, you can always have more, because you can always be more. Thanks to Les Brown, great quote. And I totally freaking love that.
So true.
This business is the best because it's going to give you more than just an extra paycheck.
Yeah.
It's going to make you to a whole new level that you can't even expect right now. But I promise you, there's so much joy and happiness on the other end of it.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to say.
I liked it. Let's end on that.
Okay.
All right. For Mama's Little Biz Podcast, my name is Angela Villa.
And I am Eddie Villa. Have a wonderful week, everybody, and happy sharing.
Bye.